Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter Jr., Brian Lynn, and John Russell. Later, we will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, the European Medicines Agency predicted that there could be drugs to treat the new coronavirus in the next few months. The organization added that a vaccine might be approved in early 2021. Dr. Marco Cavalleri heads the European Regulators Vaccines Department. He said Thursday that approving medicines to treat COVID-19 might be possible before the summer, noting several current clinical trials. A recent study in the United States suggested that the drug remdesivir could help patients recover from the coronavirus faster. Patients who received remdesivir recovered on average 4 days earlier than those who got the usual care. Earlier, animal studies showed remdesivir was effective against SARS and MERS, two diseases also caused by coronaviruses. It helped prevent infection and some symptoms when given early enough in the disease process. In France, a group of hospitals reported success with use of another drug, Actemra, against COVID-19. In a study of 129 coronavirus patients, 65 were treated with the drug, while the other patients received the usual care. The doctors did not release details, but said they were preparing to publish results. Actemra is used to treat rheumatoid arthritis and other diseases. Doctors around the world are also trying a treatment for infections that is about 100 years old, giving blood plasma from recovered patients to sick ones. Plasma is the yellowish liquid part of blood. The blood from former patients is filled with protein molecules that fight infection. These molecules can help survivors defeat COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. On Monday, the World Health Organization chief, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, said there are around 7 or 8 top candidates for a vaccine to combat COVID-19. He added, work on the vaccines is being accelerated and helped with an additional $8 billion by 40 countries. It usually takes years to develop a vaccine. But Cavalleri said that if some of the vaccines already being tested prove to be effective, they could be approved as early as the beginning of next year. Cavalleri cautioned, however, that many experimental vaccines never make it to the end and that there are often delays. But we can see the possibility that if everything goes as planned, vaccines could be approved a year from now, he said. Some experts have proposed canceling the requirement for large, extended clinical trials. But Cavalleri said that was not currently being considered. He said that could change if the situation worsened. Things may evolve as the pandemic will evolve and we will see if we need to do something else, Cavallari said. Some officials have warned that a vaccine for COVID-19 might never be found. They note that previous attempts to develop a vaccine against related coronaviruses like SARS and MERS have all failed. But Cavallari believes that a vaccine could be discovered with new technologies being tried around the world.
Sporting events and other large public gatherings have been canceled in the United States because of the COVID-19 spread. Could the country's political party nominating meetings be next? The Republican and Democratic parties were to hold their conventions in August to choose their candidates for president. Some people are wondering if the events should be virtual instead. A virtual convention would connect thousands of delegates from all 50 states and U.S. territories. Those attending could vote on everything from political party rules to the presidential nominees, all using social media tools. Currently, the Democrats are to gather over 3 days in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, beginning August 17th. The Republicans plan to gather in Charlotte, North Carolina, a week later. Expected Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden has suggested that his party may decide to hold a virtual convention if the pandemic continues. President Donald Trump has forcefully said that his party would physically gather to nominate him for a second term. Politicians and political experts are intensely speculating on what a virtual convention might look like. There's two aspects to this. There's the legal and the political, said Elaine Kmark. She is a member of the Democratic National Committee and director of the Center for Effective Public Management. She said, "The public vote for the nominee is the way that a presidential candidate gets on the ballots in all the states. So legally, you have to have a convention." Conventions bring together party members and unify the party around the nominee and get them excited about the fall campaign, said Laura Brown. She is director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University in Washington, D.C. Brown believes a virtual convention needs to involve at least 3 different platforms. There needs to be one secure platform for the delegates to be able to cast their votes, she said. Another kind of platform is needed to get people involved. Then, there needs to be a third platform that is about the production of the show, she said. Convention centers filled with thousands of party members have historically provided television networks with exciting pictures and interesting stories. How would a virtual convention appear to Americans watching TV? It would have to be done by creating the illusion of a busy convention with balloons, messages, and events through the magic of television. I'm Mario Ritter Jr.
Researchers say sea life in the South China Sea continues to suffer damage because of overfishing and a lack of international action to protect the area. Over the past year, fishing operations from several Asian countries have moved farther out into the 3.5 million square kilometer sea, experts and public research suggest. The fishermen are finding more success in deeper ocean waters than in overfished coastal areas. Ocean coral was further damaged last year as a result of large clam operations and the use of cyanide and dynamite in fishing, researchers said. China claims most of the South China Sea as its territory. Brunei, Malaysia, the Philippines, Taiwan, and Vietnam also claim parts of the sea. China has angered other claimants in recent years by creating small man-made islands in some disputed areas of the sea and building military equipment on some of the land. Attention turns to sea life in the waterway every May when China declares a temporary halt to fishing above the 12th parallel. This is an area that covers waters mostly used by China, but also areas near Vietnam and the Philippines. The yearly fishing ban began in 1995. This year, the ban runs from May 1st to August 16th. Gregory Poling is director of the Asia Maritime Transparency Initiative at the Washington-based Center for Strategic and International Studies, or CSIS. He told VOA that damage to sea life in the South China Sea is clearly worsening. He added, "We certainly don't see any evidence that anybody is doing anything about it." Fishing in the sea quickly expanded in the 1980s and early 1990s when it reached about 10 million tons per year. Those numbers come from a 2017 study. The lead researchers of the study, Sui Liang of China's Xiaomin University and Daniel Pauly from the University of British Columbia, said fishing activities leveled off after that expansion. In recent years, boats have been fishing in deeper waters and catching smaller fish. 5 years ago, fishing in the South China Sea accounted for 12% of the worldwide fish catch, CSIS estimates show. Herman Kraft is a political science professor at the University of the Philippines, Diliman. He told VOA that coastal areas are already overfished. So fishing operations from China, Taiwan, Korea, and Japan are moving toward the center of the South China Sea. The environmental group Global Underwater Explorers says dynamite and cyanide bombing is causing major damage to sea life. Such activities are widespread throughout Asia and the South China Sea, from Indonesia to southern China, the group says on its website. Large clam harvesting last year by Chinese boats harmed large coral around Scarborough Shoal, west of Luzon Island in the Philippines, media organizations in Manila reported. The World Wildlife Fund said on its website that military groups in the sea's Spratly Islands have shot turtles and seabirds and fished with explosives. I'm Brian Lynn.
Are you thinking of ways to pass the time and improve your English? In our electronic age, an old-fashioned kind of activity might be just what you need. Reading fiction is a great way to learn and explore new worlds. Today, we will discuss one of the most important ways that writers use grammar to express images and ideas, different kinds of adjectives. We begin with some definitions.
Nora Bacon is an English professor at the University of Nebraska, Omaha. She has written about language, grammar, and writing for several publications. Bacon also wrote a book called The Well-Crafted Sentence. In it, she notes that one of the biggest differences between spoken and written English is the use of adjectivals, adjectives, adjective phrases, and adjective clauses. They are much more common in writing than in speaking, she notes. As many of you know, adjectives are words that add meaning to nouns. Consider this example.
Toni Morrison was a writer.
This statement does not have an adjective. It is a very simple, factual statement. Here is how an adjective could change the sentence.
Toni Morrison was a great writer.
The adjective great adds meaning to the noun writer. This statement gives information about the speaker or writer's opinion of Morrison. Here is an important thing to remember about adjectives. Adjectives do not agree with the nouns they go with. They are neither singular nor plural. A final S is never added to an adjective, notes Betty Azar, a grammar expert we have noted in other everyday grammar programs. Here is an example that shows what she means.
Ernest Hemingway and F. Scott Fitzgerald were great writers.
Note that the noun writers is plural, but the adjective great is the same as in our sentence about Toni Morrison.
Sometimes adjectives appear as phrases, groups of words. These adjective phrases can be part of the noun phrase, or they can come before or after it. Let me give you an example. Imagine you are reading a horror story.
A thick, dark, oppressive fog covered the city. A fog, thick, dark, and oppressive, covered the city. Thick, dark, and oppressive, the fog covered the city.
Writers often use these kinds of phrases to establish or develop a kind of feeling or mood in their story.
Adjective clauses, also called relative clauses, are groups of words that have a subject-verb pair. Some words, such as that, which, or who, often lead into adjective clauses. Think back to our example about the fog. here is how it might change if it had an adjective clause.
The fog that covered the city was dark and thick.
In general, the adjective clause comes after the noun that it is describing. Adjective clauses often answer questions like, what kind of, or which one? Sometimes writers leave out words, such as that or who. With time, you will begin to recognize when these words do not appear. If you would like to read more about words that disappear from relative clauses, read The Mystery of the Disappearing That. You can find it on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Let us turn to another example, this one from My Grandmother's Choice by writer Amy Tan. Tan describes an old picture she rediscovered. She wrote the following words.
The dark-jacketed woman next to her is a servant.
The term dark-jacketed acts like an adjective and describes the noun woman. But something might be missing. Let's think about the example again with one small change.
The dark-jacketed woman who is next to her is a servant.
The adjective clause is, who is next to her is a servant. The words, who is, do not appear.
You have now learned about all kinds of adjectives. These adjective structures are one of the most important tools that writers use to bring their stories to life. And that's Everyday Grammar. On our national parks journey, we are exploring the oldest national park east of the Mississippi River. Much of the park sits on a rocky island off the coast of Maine, called Mount Desert Island. Here, you will find the tallest mountain on the east coast. You will also find black bears, moose, and more than 300 kinds of birds. This national park also holds unique Native American and European history. It is called Acadia. The 14,000-hectare park is one of the smaller major national parks in the country. Yet Acadia sees almost 3 million visitors every year. They come to experience stunning views and take part in outdoor activities like hiking and biking, and swimming in the crisp blue Atlantic Ocean.
Acadia National Park has had many names throughout history. It was first declared a national monument in 1916. Its name, Sieur des Monts National Monument, was changed by Congress in 1919. It then became known as Lafayette National Park. In 1929, the park became Acadia National Park, from a past name for the area. The name Acadia probably comes from Arcadia, an area of Greece. It is said that an Italian explorer working for the King of France sailed by the area in 1524. The explorer thought that the landscape looked like the Greek area of Arcadia.
Mount Desert Island also got its name from early European explorers. Frenchman Samuel Champlain arrived on the island in 1604. He described the island's tall peaks as bare and rocky. He named the island, in French, Île des Monts Déserts, or Island of Desert Mountains. Today, locals still say the word desert
similar to its French pronunciation, désert. Champlain and his team were not, of course, the first humans on the island. Native Americans were the first to inhabit the area. Shells and other archaeological evidence on the island date back more than 5,000 years. The native Wabanaki people arrived there in boats made from the wood of birch trees. They hunted, fished, collected berries, and harvested clams from the sea. Wabanaki people called the island Pemetic, or sloping land.
This sloping land is home to Cadillac Mountain. It is the highest point along America's eastern coast, at 466 meters. The island owes its landscape to ancient glaciers that once covered the area. Cadillac Mountain is known as the first point in the U.S. that is touched by the rising sun each morning. The name of its early inhabitants, the Wabanaki, translates to People of the Dawn. Today, the summit of Cadillac Mountain is often packed with visitors, many of whom arrive in cars and buses. It is one of the major tourist attractions within the park.
Many tourists also visit what may be the most photographed rock in the state. Bubble Rock is a giant boulder. It sits right on the edge of the summit of South Bubble Mountain. It was moved here by powerful ancient glaciers. Bubble Rock looks as though the slightest wind may push it over the mountain's edge. Visitors often take photos of themselves trying to push the huge rock off the mountain. Of course, Bubble Rock does not move. The Bubble Rock Trail winds up South Bubble Mountain. It is one of the most popular hiking trails in the park. But Acadia does offer solitude for visitors hoping to enjoy the quiet of nature. Within the park are more than 200 kilometers of trails. Many lead to stunning views of the rocky main coast. Some take you to pebbled beaches or quiet lakes surrounded by forest.
Many visitors to Acadia spend most of their time exploring Mount Desert Island. But the Skudik Peninsula is equally beautiful. The National Park Service now protects more than 1,300 hectares of land there. Skudik offers secluded beaches and peaceful hiking trails.
In summer months, visitors can take a boat from the town of Bar Harbor on Mount Desert Island to the town of Winter Harbor on Skudik Peninsula. The tiny fishing town is a great place to enjoy Maine lobster in many forms. A few small family-owned restaurants serve classic Maine dishes like lobster soup, lobster rolls, or simple steamed lobster. But wherever visitors explore in Acadia, they will leave wishing they could see more. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.